Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Women Who Inspire. I'm Cynthia Pooler. My guest today is my friend Megan Buchanan. And Megan recently got back from summiting Antarctica. And she's here to talk about what it was like. So, you know, you posted stuff on Facebook, but the duration wasn't as long as when you were in Everest. What was it like in Antarctica? It must have been a little chilly, right?
Yeah, I have to say, Antarctica is literally the coldest place on Earth. It was much colder than Everest, but absolutely one of the most, it is so hard to put in words how extraordinary and special this place is. And, you know, so I had a multi-part adventure. Since my total goal is to do the Grand Slam, I was able to do the last degree ski to the South Pole, which is you are dropped literally in a prop plane at 89 degrees, and then you on skis and pulling a 60-pound sled, carrying all of your stuff behind you, you do the ski for 60 nautical miles to the South Pole. And we did that first. That is actually pretty flat, except for these sastrugis, which are formations made by the wind. So you're almost going, it's like a high plain desert, but it's all snow and ice. And if you have the right goggles, or you're like, am I on ice or sand? What is happening? But the altitude there is, you go from about 8,000 to 9,000 feet. The South Pole is at 9,000 feet. So you're at altitude. And we did that for 7 days, and extreme wind and cold, all sorts of very special gear we had to put together to prevent frostbite on the face, the thighs, and your rear actually is known to get frostbite in the South Pole. And women are three times as likely to get frostbite than men are. Got through that fine, had the right gear. Of course, there's struggle and pain. I had to use borrowed boots from the mountaineering company for the ski, because they have specific boots that fit in your ski. However, it rubbed a horrendous wound on the back of my heel. And so at that point now, I am skiing for 3 days with pretty much an open flesh wound and getting through that pain and just keep thinking pain is temporary, and really hoping that it didn't stop my climb, which is what I was going to do next. So we made it to the South Pole for New Year's Eve, which was really amazing. And there's a research center there run by Americans, but we were not allowed to go near there for fears of COVID. But we were there for New Year's Eve, where they go and realign where the, you know, true South Pole is, and they move the pole, and they have a new pole every year. But on New Year's Eve, I was able to walk around the actual South Pole in a 360-degree circle and travel in and out of 2022 back into 2021, which was really, really special. So we stayed. Yeah, it was really cool. And so we stayed the night there, and actually we were able, all logistics, everything in Antarctica is logistics. I had actually been at Union Glacier, the main base, for 8 days before we could even leave for the ski, because they could not, there's all these logistics. It's a five-hour flight from Union Glacier to the drop-off at 89 degrees, and the weather just wouldn't hold, so we waited. You do a lot of waiting. And that was my greatest challenge on this trip, was the patience in that. But we flew back to Union Glacier, and then it was ready to go take a different flight over to a different area of Antarctica and climb Mount Vinson, which is the highest peak in Antarctica at 16,050 feet. So point is, it's a very special group of people that's down there. It is literally the best of the best mountaineers and polar explorers and or billionaires who come down just to play or see the penguins. So it's this extreme eccentric group of people all sharing meals together at Union Glacier and cheering each other on for whatever venture is going on, people getting stuck in weather, and you bond very quickly. So all in all, we probably came across and met, there's you know, maybe 100 people total for the season that come through. So it's very small and unique. So we finally, I partnered with this wonderful mountaineer named Lucy Rivers Bulks from the UK, and we met on our way in. We're the same mountaineering company. We met in Santiago, Chile, and we were going to be tent mates through everything because she's doing the ski as well, and we became fast friends. And so our adventures together, and we caught a last-minute prop plane to go to Vinson Base Camp. We had told we weren't going to be flying out for days. The weather was coming in. But there's a last-minute flight because a very special group was coming down and needed a flight out of base camp. So we jumped on this plane, and it's full of food and fuel, refueling base camp. We get there. There's no other, you know, climbers, just some of the staff from ALE, which is Antarctica Logistics Exploration. And the next 5 minutes, we've got a glass of champagne in our hand, which is actually a plastic glass because it starts freezing. And down comes a group, and it is legends of mountaineering. Dave Hahn, who I've met numerous times, world-renowned, Conrad Anker, Ed Wiesters, and then Jared Isaacman, who is a U.S. Billionaire known for, he's a pilot. He was on the SpaceX, he's mission commander on Inspiration. And Jared had brought some of his close friends to climb Mount Vinson. Some of them had never been on crampons before. And so most people turned around, but a couple made it. But here they come down the hill. And next thing I know, within being at Vinson Base Camp for 30 minutes, I'm sipping champagne and you know, talking shop with Conrad Anker and Dave Hahn. And it was an unbelievable moment for me. And they're like, oh, yeah, we're friends on Facebook. You're the rocket scientist, right? And I'm like, oh, my God, they know who I am. I can die happy now. So it was just an amazing experience. And our group had been up on the mountain already. We were late because our ski was late. And so now we didn't know what group we were going to go up with. Our team was already climbing and waiting for summit. We were at base camp for 3 days. Our team comes down. They all summited. But at this point now, everyone came down from the mountain, and there's a good week before the next group comes in to climb Vinson. One of our guides for climbing the seven summits, Tendi, who is one of the owners, and I know from Nepal, he was like, Bulks, Megan, I'll take you back up. He had just gotten down, and he wanted to go right back up with us. So what's even more exciting is that there was no one else on the mountain. We had it to ourselves, and Bulks is fast and motivated. I was highly motivated. And Tendi is just a beast. So we actually did our summit, base camp to low camp, next day to high camp. Then we did summit, and then we made the decision to go all the way back down to base camp. We did it in 57 hours. And it was absolutely epic and amazing and gorgeous. And to be on that summit and know we're the only ones on that mountain right then was just like such I was so satisfied and proud. And man, I knocked off, South Pole and Vincent. I was so energized. What I didn't realize was my hands were so cold. I actually ended up getting frostbite on two of my fingers, which I've never had happen before. But it was extremely cold. This one ridge was about negative 50 degrees with wind chill. And I actually got off easy. So many people got frostbite down in Antarctica. But I had so much adrenaline going. That's another reason that we just wanted to get down to base camp. We got back in at about 1 a.m. And then I got to sleep a couple days, and weather finally cleared, and because a huge storm had come in, and we were able to get back to Union Glacier. And then rest my hands, see the doctors, and then eventually fly back out. And now I'm back in Vail and just had another appointment with my hand surgeon, and he has given me the green light. We've got a plan together of how I'm going to keep training and heal my hand properly and return to Everest in literally just over 2 months. I go back to do Everest again. So I know that was a lot, but that was the recap of what happened. So let's go with that.
So the people, did you know anybody that you summited Antarctica with?
Mount Vincent. Yes, I knew Tendi. Tendi Sherpa is with Climbing the Seven Summits, and I know him from Climbing the Seven Summits mountaineering group that I was on Everest with. So he was on Everest there, so I knew him already. And then, you know, I knew all the other guides from there. I knew tons of people down there, but from different climbs I've done. But the actual climbing of Mount Vincent and Summit, it was just Bulk's Lucy, Tendi and me. And Lucy, she is from the UK. And again, we met in Santiago, Chile on our way in. That was the first time we met, but we spent over 4 weeks together. So now we are actually, she just called me right before this. We are very close friends now. And the three of us summited that day together.
So what do you have left? You have Everest, and then what else do you have?
Yeah, Everest is the big one, and hopefully that will complete this spring, and then next early September this year, I plan on finishing my seven summits, and right now I'm signed up for Kartens Pyramid, and that is in Papua Guinea, so I fly through Indonesia, and it's called Kartens Pyramid. I could do that, or I could do Kosciuszko in Australia. But with COVID, it's been very hard to get in and out of Australia. I'll end up doing both. But regardless, I will do one of them this fall, and that will be my seventh summit. And then the following spring, 2023, to finish the Grand Slam, I need to complete the last degree ski to the North Pole. Now, what's super fun is that Bulks has to do that as well for her Grand Slam. And then we also met an amazing woman down in Antarctica. She just became the first woman of color to do a solo cross-continent ski of Antarctica. Her name's Preet, and she's with the UK Army. And we're trying to talk her into coming and doing the North Pole with us as well. So we want to do an all-female last-degree ski to the North Pole. And for most of us, that will finish the Grand Slam. Yeah, it would be really amazing.
So if you complete everything that you want to, I know we've talked about this before, but how many women have actually done this?
So the Explorer's Grand Slam, which is the last, it's the seven summits, and then the last degree ski, which is that skiing from 89 degrees to true to North or South Pole, only 12 women have done it. So there is a whole group of women that I know now that we're all trying to be that 13th, and we're thinking about crossing that finish line together. But only 12 women recorded have done it. Now, the Adventurer's Grand Slam, which then would be the difference is the last degree or the ski to North and South Pole, but again, it would be a cross continent, which is more of a 600 mile. That's a much larger feat, which, you know, I would like to go on to do that. I believe only three women have ever done it. No U.S. women.
And so when you go back to Everest in the springtime, are you better prepared than you were last year?
For sure.
Okay.
And I think just having gone through everything builds on each other. I think every time you push yourself, and this is not just mountain climbing, but this is in life, anytime you push yourself, you stress yourself, you struggle, that suffering. You better prepare yourself for the next time. And so one of the things I really worked on the ski, it wasn't going up and down high altitudes. It was a steady altitude, ski, but I struggled with patience and with fidgeting, and I'm too hot, I'm too cold. My mind running crazy. And I knew right then, I would almost get a little panicky because my body be too hot, but my face would be too frozen. And I remember feeling that exact panicky feel when I was on Everest and when I was approaching Camp 3 for the first time. I was so temperature, I was so uncomfortable, I started to panic a little bit inside. And I recognized that feeling. So on this ski, I was like, I'm going to sit with this discomfort. I'm going to get used to it so that when I return to Everest, this will not panic me. I'll be prepared. And so it is like pushing yourself through that suffering in life prepares you for when you come across it again, you'll be able to handle it. So, I mean, just that right there. And then, yes, everything I learned on Everest last year and you know, the stuff, you know, really what you need to train for. And I had trained pretty darn well. I felt good with my skills, but there's other little things and little nuances that I'm so much better prepared for and have it dialed in. And also what things I brought that maybe were extra weight that I know I won't use. And so streamlining. So absolutely, I feel going into Everest, I feel so excited and confident. And this is the year it's going to happen. Like, I'm summiting. It's happening.
Wow. But it was to no fault of your own that you were one day away from summiting and there was an outbreak of COVID. That's heartbreaking. Let me ask you this. When you complete the seven summits and the Grand Slam, would you consider going back to Everest just for a challenge and doing it again?
You know, first of all, I never say never. And if it was I'll tell you what I don't want to do. I don't want to have to find the funding for it again. That is the hardest part of all this. Like, I spent every dollar of savings I have. I mean, luck, I don't have kids, so I spend every dollar on this. I haven't bought a house because I totally could have bought a house by now. So, you know, I've been sinking every dollar, time, effort I've got into this. So I need a break from raising money. But if it is a funded, you know, exploration and pushing things forward, oh, heck yeah. I am sure I would go back. You know, there's always this thing too of with or without oxygen. You know, at this point, any mountaineering, legit mountaineering company you're with and your first time on Everest, you have to use oxygen. They're not going to let you not use oxygen. I always wonder, though, how my body would do, because my body deals with altitude extremely well. I would love to push some of the limits of, like, do I maybe not need oxygen until South Col? Or, you know, those are just some of the things I think about. But, of course there's going to be, after I finish the Grand Slam, of course there's going to be things coming up after that that I'll start focusing on. And going back to Everest, sure. Would I take people to do the Everest Base Camp trip? I would do that every single year. It is, the Khumbu Valley is so special to me. It is such a beautiful place. I would love to return to Nepal every year if I could.
I'm reading the book now about the history of women and exercise and sports, and it's only since like the 1950s that women have ventured out to do all kinds of physical activity for their health and well-being. When you do like Everest, like you just finished Antarctica, do you feel that the men accept you and the other women mountaineers, like with no misogyny or prejudice or anything? Are you full-fledged members in the community of mountaineers?
You know, I think just generally, well, especially in the world, you're also dealing with multicultures. So different cultures think of it very differently, whether they accept us or not, and you all need to get along. But definitely there are cultures that are there climbing that do not think women are equal. But even in our own country, you know, we have systemic misogyny everywhere. It's in engineering where I work. It's on the mountains. But then it gets down to you have to look at the individual, person by person, and say whether it's there or not. Or generally, you can look at a mountaineering outfitter, a company. Do they generally support and embrace women going, I will only climb with a company that absolutely treats women equally and accepts them fully and you know, and even, you know, goes out of their way to celebrate. And so there absolutely is a wonderful, amazing community. And the outdoor community, especially in rock climbing, mountaineering, they are really doing a lot right now, especially to encourage women to get into the sport, to encourage minorities to get into the sport and start breaking really those boundaries down. So I really applaud those things. Now, the other side of it is, of course there are people, and generally it will be men who are of a earlier, decade, who still just have their opinions about women, and they might accept a scene on the mountain, but there's always little comments, little things that they think. But I tell you what, on Mount Vinson, when Lucy and I did our summit in 57 hours, which usually is about a 5 to 7 day round trip summit, some of those men who might have had thoughts that women like this too, we definitely blew their minds on that one and hopefully taught them a little bit of a lesson. But generally, like the mountaineering company I'm with, climbing the seven summits, oh my gosh. So I've actually never seen a company that had so many female clients and like skilled female clients, just amazing. RMI out of the Northwest, they do an awesome job, you know, really embracing and bringing in female guides as well. So there's a lot of really great companies here that fully embrace women as an equal part of the community.
You mentioned a little while that you had frostbite. People are uninformed on exactly what frostbite is. You got it a while ago when you're still suffering. So can you describe what frostbite is? People think, oh, it's, you know, your hands get cold and once, you know, they're not cold anymore, you're okay. So what is frostbite?
That is a great question because it's so funny how I got back. Some friends were like, oh, I think I got, yeah, like oh, this winter. I was like, yeah, you know when you've got frostbite. So there, first of all, there's frost nip, which is when your hands have been in very cold and especially for long duration times, your fingertips are tingly and they're a little numb. And that's pretty normal. When you've been in cold for a very long time, and that takes a few weeks, a few weeks to 2 months to kind of to go away, but there isn't permanent damage. Frostbite is when it actually goes to the point, and this is crazy, where the water molecules in your body, in your skin and flesh, freeze, and when they freeze, it dies, and so I have got and then there'll be really severe, and it goes in severity. I have, I'd say, like a level one actual frostbite. And so the fingertips were very bulbous. They're hard like wood. I cannot feel, like when I touch them, I cannot feel it. And they were purple down the sides, and there were blisters underneath my nails. Now, we recognized it within hours of it happening. And then for my entire descent, I kept my hand in my 8,000-meter mitt glove and hand warmers. And my wonderful guide, Tendi, he's like, keep your hand in there. And so then we got treated by a doctor. So now it will take, it's generally 2 to 5 months, 3 to 6 months for this to heal fully. Now, these fingers are damaged in a way that they will get cold much easier from now on. If I let these fingers, in this healing process, if I let them freeze again, I will definitely have more severe frostbite and could end up, you know, that's when you start losing your digits, when they get so dead that they turn black. So right now, my fingers are fighting. They're fighting to you know, regenerate. And right now, I'm in the stage where I've got huge blisters underneath. The nails are pushed out, but they haven't ruptured. And now all the skin is starting to peel off all around my fingers. So it is Ooh. It is very interesting. But I'm working with Dr. at Vail Summit Orthopedics, who, oh, my God, that group here in Vail has put this Humpty Dumpty together so many times. Their vascular hand surgeon, Dr. Dorf, and he working with him as a partnership of, okay, Megan, how are we going to get you to train for Everest in the cold and be okay, and then be okay on Everest? So working with him on a plan to get me where I need to be, so that I can keep on going. And he's feeling very confident with how everything is healing. And I'll just keep visiting with him every couple of weeks and do it the right way.
How many fingers were damaged because of first bite?
Yeah, two. On my right hand, my middle finger and my thumb. What's fascinating, the rest have frost nip, but I have frostbite. Now, when I was on summit day going uphill on ascent, the reason my right hand got it and my left hand didn't is because as my hands are holding my poles and you're moving them as you move up the mountain, my right hand would slip into the shadow of my body. And the temperature difference between in the sun and the shadow is what gave it frostbite. It was that cold that day. So, I mean, as bad as it is, it's fascinating to me how that happened. So, I mean, just unreal.
Wow. We have just about a minute left, but I want to ask you one question. As we speak, the Winter Olympics is going on. After the Olympics, would you be interested in doing a show with me on your thought about, you know, women in sports and how it all went? Would that be something you'd be interested in?
Sure. Sounds good. I honestly am not watching too much of the Olympics right now because I am working really hard and training, but I'll start watching them.
Okay, so tell everybody your organization and your website for people who want to become more familiar with you.
Thank you. I would love to. So go to GRIT, which is G-G-R-I-T, Growth, Resilience, Integrity, and Tenacity.com. You can follow my adventures on Instagram at GRIT. I love posting and sharing everything I go through. And honestly, too, I am just decided to partner with a nonprofit. I'm dyslexic, and the struggle through my life made me who I am and gave me this drive. And so I am giving 100% of my net proceeds to IDA, the International Dyslexia Association, because as a little kid, this is where I found my voice, and this is who made me this driven adult to, like, reach my full potential and rise. So I would love anyone who wants to help with learning disabilities, please check it out. That'd be awesome.
So, Megan, we will talk again. You've been listening to Megan Buchanan. I'm Cynthia Pula. This is Women Who Inspire. And if you like this show, like us on Facebook. Megan, I always look forward to speaking with you. And thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a great day.
Thank you, Cynthia. Have a good weekend. Bye.